from San Francisco, California, with your host, Ben Kaspic. This is Locked On Giants Baseball. Welcome back to Locked On Giants Baseball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Kaspic, and I'm thrilled to be with you again today. On the show, we provide daily episodes Monday through Friday, approximately 15 minutes in length, talking about the San Francisco Giants in a way that's data-driven and rational, but also insightful and easily digestible, easy for everyone to understand. I think on this show, we also like to bridge the gap between what happens on the field and what happens in the front office. Coming up on today's show, I guess it's officially the first day of the MLB offseason because the Washington Nationals defeated the Houston Astros in Game 7 of the World Series last night to win their first championship in franchise history. So a huge congratulations to them. Huge disappointment for the Astros, who were the heavy favorites in this series and lost all four games at home. It's never happened before in any of the major American professional sports that have seven-game series. It had never happened through six games where the road team had won every game, but now it has happened in seven. Unbelievable to think that the Astros would lose this World Series by losing all four games at home. It's simply unthinkable. So that is just one of a number of different things that we have to talk about on today's show. We also have a Giants managerial update, a big update, and we have the Giants making their first move of the offseason, putting in a claim on a player and designating someone else for assignment. So we'll get into all of that on today's show, but first, just kind of reflecting on the World Series briefly, just a few takeaways. Number one, the strike zone was bad. And we talked on yesterday's show about how the way I think about rules is that would you want this to determine a World Series? And I wouldn't necessarily say that the strike zone last night determined the outcome, but there were some huge calls that could have changed certain innings and could have led to more scoring or prevented some scoring. Just a lot of really bad calls last night. And Tom Verducci, the sideline reporter for Fox, was saying that Jim Wolf, the umpire, was behind the plate because he was the best in terms of strike zone rate and being accurate with his calls in MLB. And so that's the best that MLB has to offer. And he was missing a lot of really egregious pitches. And there were several borderline pitches that he appeared to miss as well. But for example, we had Carlos Correa leading off the eighth inning down by two runs. In a 2-2 count, the pitch is clearly like the width of three baseballs inside. At least two, maybe two and a half baseballs inside. And it should have been ball three. We're talking leading off an inning, game seven of the World Series in the eighth, down by two runs. Instead of ball three, it's strike three, and Correa never had a chance. And you know, it didn't directly influence anything. It's not like the bases were loaded and it was a full count and a ball would have scored a run. But a 3-2 count, you have a pretty high probability of getting on base, which it should have been a 3-2 count after that pitch. But instead, you have no chance and you're rung up and there's one out in the inning. So that call swung the Astros' chances of winning the game by like 4 percentage points from about 13% down to 9%. So it's just unacceptable when we have the box on the TV. I understand it's not 100% accurate what we're seeing on TV, but it's a heck of a lot better than what the umpires are doing. And I don't blame the umpires. They're human and they're going to make mistakes. We've seen that. I don't think if anybody thinks they could do a better job, I think they're wrong. These are the best in the world at doing this. It's just a hard thing to do with precision. And that is why we need the computers. So that was just one example. It happened numerous times. And in fact, it happened to Greinke in the at-bat by Juan Soto when Soto ended up walking and scoring the tying run in the seventh inning. I believe it was a 2-1 pitch that was clearly a strike at the bottom of the zone, and it was called a ball, and it became 3-1. So instead of 2-2, it's 3-1. That very well could have determined the outcome. We don't know. So anyway, just to me, totally unacceptable when we have the technology. As maybe slightly imperfect as it is, it's better than what we currently have. And so it's something we absolutely need to push for immediately. Second takeaway here from the World Series is that Even the Houston Astros, the mighty Astros, could not win two titles in 3 years like the San Francisco Giants did twice. And of course, the sum of those two was three titles in 5 years. But yeah, it just goes to show you how incredibly fortunate the Giants and their fans are for having won in 2010, 2012, and 2014. It's just not that easy to do. And there's so much that can go wrong. And if you think back to 2012 and what it took for the Giants to win that second championship, they had to win, what was it, six elimination games, which was more than the Nationals this season. Down 2-0 in the division series and then down 3-1 in the NLCS. Just incredible. And then in 2014, they had to win a wild card game just to get into the postseason. And then the World Series went seven games. And as we saw last night, it can just go either way. It's totally possible to lose a game like that. It becomes really easy to act as if it was fate and destiny, but really it's one baseball game determining the winner of the World Series, which is just nuts. And man, the Giants pulled it out three times. It's just incredible. So just goes to show how hard it is to win in baseball in the postseason. Last two takeaways from this game. Hunter Strickland, of all people, gets a World Series ring with the Nationals and Bryce Harper does not. Just a bit of the strangeness of the game right there. And last point, Gerardo Parra also gets a ring. Forever Giant Gerardo Parra gets a ring with the Nationals. Just incredible what a cult hero he became in DC after a pretty nondescript couple of months with the Giants. Kyle Bearclaw also gets a World Series ring on the day he was designated for assignment. And we'll talk about that. The Giants DFA'd Bearclaw to make room for the player they claimed. So we'll talk about that in the second half of the show, as well as these managerial updates, these big updates by Alex Pavlovich this morning. So that'll all be coming up next, but first... All right, as promised here in the second half of the show, we're going to talk about these managerial updates for the Giants, their big ones, and a sneaky under-the-radar claim that I think is a great little move for the Giants. So the managerial update comes from Alex Pavlovich, who says on Twitter this morning that, quote, per sources, the Giants' search for a new manager is now focused on Joe Espada, Gabe Kapler, and Pedro Grifol. So this is a bombshell because if it's true, we finally have our finalists when we've just been searching in the dark here, trying to figure out who made it through to the next round and who's been eliminated from the search. Espada, Kapler, and Grifol. I have always felt like Pedro Grifol was a sneaky, under-the-radar, great candidate for this job. Everything I've heard about him is phenomenal, coming from, you know, reading about what players and coaches had to say about him in Kansas City and crediting him with their improvements. I believe Jorge Soler, who led the American League in home runs, credits Pedro Grifol for his monster breakout season. All three managerial candidates are in their 40s. Joe Espada reportedly going to interview with the Giants again after the World Series. So now that's over, I would expect him to interview either today or tomorrow. Wouldn't be shocked if the Giants gave him one day to take off after losing in Game 7 of the World Series, but I would expect that to ramp up here now that the World Series has concluded. We heard that Kapler had his second interview probably on Monday of this week, so I wouldn't be surprised if they've also done their second interview with Grifol, and now they're just waiting to talk to Espada. So this thing could definitely pick up here, you know, the next couple days and over the weekend. I think it's entirely possible we could have a new manager in place by this time next week. I'll just say it again. People seem to freak out about the idea of Gabe Kapler, but my impression is just that we don't know all there is to know about him. And if you're a frequent listener of the show, you've heard me say this over and over, but does any of us actually know Gabe Kapler? Because I don't. I just know what Phillies fans had to say about him. And Phillies fans famously booed Santa Claus, so maybe we would have a bad impression of Santa Claus if we were just going based on what Phillies fans had to say about him. So, I mean, there are some red flags. I did have him low on my list of possible candidates when I did that episode. But at the same time, I think we know maybe like half of 1% that there is to know about Gabe Kapler and how he would be in that role. And the other 99.5% is up to Farhan Zaidi and the Giants' ownership and front office to figure out and determine if he's the best person. So if they do hire him, I'm going to have to concede and say, okay, let's learn more about this and trust what they're doing, because I do kind of wholeheartedly trust the Giants front office to make a good decision here. So I think, you know, it's super interesting that it's come down to these three, and I guess we'll just continue to monitor and figure out who's going to be the next manager of the Giants. One other piece of news before we talk about the Giants claiming an interesting player. Nick Piacoro, who is the Diamondbacks beat writer for the Arizona Republic, reported last night that Matt Hergis will be the Diamondbacks' next pitching coach. Hergis is a former longtime big league reliever, and he spent the last 2 years as the Giants' bullpen coach. So I think it was Alex Pavlovich who said that it was a good hire for the Diamondbacks, and a lot of people with the Giants thought that he might be the one guy who survives the turnover that's about to happen with the coaching staff. So maybe a consequence of the Giants not yet having a manager in place. Not a huge consequence. I don't think it really, really matters. They're not primed to be World Series contenders in 2020. So if you can't get your top choice of a bullpen coach, for example, for 2020, you can always revisit the topic next offseason. So I don't think people need to freak out about that and read too much into the fact that the Giants are taking their time with the manager search. In fact, all along I've said that I think they're doing the smart things, and the other teams around the league being hasty have perhaps been a little bit too hasty. And this is a position I would want the front office to take their time with and really consider who they think is the right person for the job. So anyway, last piece of news, we're not going to have time to talk about it too much, and that'll be what we'll do on tomorrow's show, unless there's anything new that comes up. But the Giants claimed left-handed starting pitcher Tyler Anderson from the Colorado Rockies. And in a corresponding move, they DFA'd Kyle Bearclaw. On the same day the Nationals won the World Series, he was on the Nationals before the Giants, and so he's getting a World Series ring. Kind of a weird, bittersweet day for Kyle Bearclaw, I'm sure. But just kind of my quick takeaway from this claim, I like Tyler Anderson a lot. His biggest issue has been giving up homers, but that's pretty much true of 99% of pitchers who play for the Rockies. I guess you could say his other biggest issue is that he's hurt, and he had knee surgery in June and is expected to start the 2020 season on the injured list. But when he's healthy, this guy was pretty darn good. He had a 3.54 ERA with peripherals to match in 2016 as a pitcher for the Rockies. That's just really incredible. He's averaged 2.5 Fangraphs WAR per 200 innings pitched, which is basically a full season for a starter. 2.5 wins above replacement. That is an upgrade for the Giants starting rotation. So if he's healthy, he currently slots in as one of their top five starters, almost certainly. So it's a nice little pickup that didn't really cost them anything. He's arbitration eligible, so I would imagine that the Giants are planning to tender him a contract and have him in the mix in 2020. And I like the move. So we'll talk about it a lot more on tomorrow's show. But, you know, naturally, people who don't really know Tyler Anderson want to come out and criticize this move and say it's just more roster churn and he gave up a bunch of homers and had a really bad ERA in 2019. But that's totally missing the point. It's just another incremental upgrade and a guy who they're buying low on, but has definite potential to be an upgrade to their starting rotation, which is definitely something they need. All right, that's all the time we have for today. Remember to get this show every single weekday. You need to hit that subscribe button if you haven't done so already. Once again, my name is Ben Kaspic. Check me out on Twitter, @BenKaspic, and please consider rating the show, leaving a review, and telling your friends and family to check us out. I cannot wait to be with you again tomorrow, and until then, we'll see you next time.